here in Asheville, we've got a lot going on. We've had such a large population influx, but a lot of what's accelerating the population influx in Asheville has been development and, you know, this place being marketed as a destination for people to visit and live. And so developers naturally swoop in to this vacuum, the vulture venture capitalists, I guess is what they call them, who are just playing with somebody else's money, somebody else's investment money, you know, and building some developments and trying to convince people to move into them and how great Asheville is and how close it is to the interstate and mountain views and all that good stuff, you know. And people are buying it. People are coming in. But, you know, the world isn't static is the thing. Like, I think that the mind is lazy. Most of our minds have a tendency to be lazy and to just take for granted that the way things were before is the way things are now and the way they're going to continue to be. And the world is changing. The world is changing really fast. And our town is changing, too, in ways that are sometimes startling and require more attention. And I have a couple of friends, neighbors, and guests this evening here on the Mothership Slight Return with me, Steve Rasmussen and Queen Lady Passion from right here in West Asheville. Welcome aboard the Mothership Slight Return. I'm so glad to have you here. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks. I'm really pleased to be here.
Yeah. And Queen, thank you so much for being here with us.
You're welcome.
You all have an interesting history in this town, and we're gonna delve into that. But I want to talk about a couple of things that have been in the news, and some of them have to do with the two of you, of course, because it's about trees. This is about our trees of Asheville. So, John Boyle went to a community meeting in West Asheville recently. John Boyle of the Asheville Citizen Times on December 3rd, 2019, published a piece called Neighbors Toured Land, Talk to Developers, Opposition to Crossroads Complex, Plan Remains. And in it, Boyle describes how a proposed major development remains a tough sell to nearby residents. There was a December 2nd community meeting about the Crossroads at West Asheville proposal to build 802 apartment units on a 68-acre property at the Crossroads Asheville Church, and which would be the largest residential development in Western North Carolina. And it gets bigger than that. The developers are called Catalyst Capital Partners of Charlotte.
CCC, huh?
Doesn't that make you feel at home? Catalyst Capital Partners of Charlotte.
Not exactly the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yeah.
Don't make us build a wall.
Yeah.
So the Catalyst Capital Partners of Charlotte is planning on also building 14,400 square feet of retail space, 50,400 square feet of office space, and 64,000 square feet of self-storage on the 68 acres, along with the 802 apartment units. So many of you will know this place. It's the giant field that's on South Bear Creek Road. If you take Sand Hill out to Bear Creek, and hang that first left, hang a left on to stay on Sand Hill, and then take your first left over that really narrow two-lane bridge. The first thing you're going to see on your left is the big church. It's kind of a mega-sized church building almost on a massive, about 100-acre property. It's fields, it's trees, it's ridges, and a lot of people will know that. It's a very narrow two-lane road. That's already complicated for two cars of a small size to get across at the same time. And So the church used to own this, you know, close to 100 acres property itself, and sold it to another party, which is trying to sold 2/3 of it to another party and kept about 35 acres. Now, Catalyst Capital Partners is considering buying the property, but it's all depending on what happens at our Buncombe County Board of Adjustment meeting, where this development will be reviewed for a third and supposedly final time, December 11th at noon to one in the TD Bank building, county government building that says TD Bank on the front, across the street from the courthouse on College Avenue. Turnout and a show of public interest and public support is definitely relevant in this process. And in this place, which I consider to be the biggest green space in my neighborhood, you know, there are some other significant green spaces over on this side of the river. But in my neighborhood, that's definitely the biggest one I have access to. Marsha Broomberg, local residents like Marsha Broomberg, raised concerns about wildlife habitat destruction, destruction of green space, the short lifespan of slipshod built modern buildings and how wasteful that is, traffic idiocy on a tiny little road that isn't built for that, a lack of utilities that are out there that can serve a giant development like that, pop-up village. And people also express concerns about bringing in hundreds of people into the neighborhood who aren't grounded in the neighborhood and who would be just sort of transient occupying apartments. So, yes, the Buncombe County Board of Adjustment for a third and supposedly final time on December 11th, coming right up. And that is 6 days away. Sounds like Wednesday of next week. Yep, Wednesday at noon to one, in the county government TD Bank building across the street from the courthouse on College. Kate Millar, incoming president of the Malvern Hills Association, said, "We'd ask them to come back with changes. They know our concerns. They've not come back with any movement at all." And Moni and Mike Hill, who live in Malvern Hills, expressed concerns with the scope of the project and its potential effects on wildlife, plants, and the environment in general. Moni Hill would like to see the site become a preserve. It does look like a city park, doesn't it? Right across the street from the Hominy Creek Trail Greenway Park place. Wonderful thing for the neighborhood over there. Let's add to people's quality of life instead of detracting from it, said Moni Hill, holding her 6-year-old daughter. "I think we have enough development, and it's not affordable housing." And now we had a very exciting, I was so excited to see on the front page above the full color photo of the Sunday edition of the Asheville Citizen Times, crowing about the trees, just all in it, you know, just completely about it. And, you know, there's so much great information in here, and Steve and Queen, you have both had a key role in the tree protection movement in this town, and you're clearly getting some traction because you're on the front page of the Sunday Asheville Citizen Times in full color, and you know, it was a pretty well-written article by Joel Burgess, really delved into the details and the different sides of this issue that and how they fit together. But just briefly to rattle off the numbers that came out of this. There was a Davy Research Group out of Kent, Ohio, released a report in late October that Asheville lost 891 acres of trees between 2008 and 2018. That's 6.4% of the entire tree canopy of Asheville lost in 10 years. Not a very good trend line, a pretty worrisome trend line, really. As I understand it, the existing canopy covers 44% of the city, Kind of sounds like we... Well, the math is probably complicated, but we don't have that much to lose is the point. We already have more than half the city denuded slash paved or, you know, without anything beyond lawn turf, I guess. But,
Well, it gets worse than that because the more trees you remove, the hotter it gets because they're getting replaced with houses and pavement. And along with that urban tree canopy study, the folks we've been working with, which include the Tree Commission, now called the Urban Forest Commission.
Not to mention NASA.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting to. NASA. NASA worked with the city to do a study of the increase in the heat island effect in Asheville due to this lack of tree cover, this loss of tree cover. And in some areas, the temperature's gone up 31 degrees.
In Asheville?
Yeah, in some areas.
Wow.
According to my notes.
Wow.
Yes.
They've obviously this is the radio. You can't see those horrible maps they've produced, but it goes from green in 1984 to mostly red now. And the worst part about it is the climate injustice, because most of this is in low-income areas. That's one thing this urban tree canopy study and the NASA study, one thing they really looked a lot into was where is tree loss mostly affecting people? Where's it hitting hardest?
It's hitting hardest in West Asheville.
And especially in West Asheville and also lower income areas around the city. Because
like Hillside.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The reason is irresponsible development. Developers and too often planners, they don't really see a piece of nature. They see just a bunch of lines on a map, and they just want to clear cut that whole area to give themselves a flat table to build their little architectural model writ large on.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, though, when you mentioned the role of regulation. Like, it's true that it's terrible to see people running amok and mucking things up one little patch of ground at a time and see it all being piecemealed half to death. But we can do things that we can make collective decisions through local government that can actually have a citywide change.
Well, we can put pressure on people. Ultimately, they will or will not show political will to do what's right.
Yeah.
But I kind of disagree with Juve, if I can push back a little bit.
Oh, sure.
I don't think of it remotely as irresponsibility. It's flat greed. And it reminds me of when we started, we worked for 2 years within the system we were told to work within, going to meetings every day for 2 years, this commission, that commission. We would have wins, and then another commission would come in and say, oh, they don't have the authority. You have to answer to us. And on it went. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, the developer we were fighting, whose company was called Black Dog LLC, and then pretty indicative of how they named their corporations. You were talking about the, what was that, CCC one that you mentioned before?
Right.
Catalyst, yeah.
Yeah, Catalyst Capitals.
Yeah, he too wanted a legacy project, 14-story luxury condos nobody could afford, right in front of City Hall, destroying that whole iconic look. And he wanted to whack 2-century-old magnolias that were intertwined in order to do it. He wanted to obliterate an old jail underneath the trees. He wanted to obliterate an 1800s building along with that. And it was vainglory. And we called him on it. And after 2 years of meetings, when a woman who was supposed to protect treasure trees voted to whack them, I just said, that's it.
This is the trees in front of City Hall.
These are the famous magnolias.
Yes, in front of City Hall and in downtown Asheville,
yes.
Right behind Pax Tavern, patio.
Right. And there was no Pax Tavern then.
Oh, yeah.
But I went out.
What time, when is this? What time
this
period?
This is around 2007 to 2008.
Yeah. Huh.
So I walked outside, I sat on the roots, and I just didn't get up for 3.5 months.
Tree sit.
Yeah. Day and night, night and day, nothing but a cloak. No tent, no nothing. Wow. We depended on people for food. I made an outdoor parlor, and everybody got to come and shake their fists at the powers that be and express their you know, opinion of it. And it turns out by showing that this is a symbol of horror, and unnecessary horror, we drew massive support, unparalleled, which gave in time not only saved the trees and the jail, then we continued to work with the developer afterwards when everybody thought it was all over, to have him preserve that 1800s building and make it into a people's pub to sort of make it up to the people that he had hurt so much in this whole long drawn out you know, saga. And he made those trees a feature of his money-making venture. So he got to save face, but we didn't have a 14-story luxury condo built. And all ended up pretty well. The upshot,
there was going to be a 14-story luxury condo in front of City Hall.
Where the trees are, where the magnolias sit.
Right now.
Yeah.
Talk about symbolism, too, right in the City Hall's front yard.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, and on land that
was public parkland,
but that the county under Wanda Green and what's the assistant manager? John Creighton illegally
yeah, they sold it illegally.
The two that are now in jail, yeah.
Yeah, they illegally sold it, and we just found out about
sold it right out. Wow.
And so we started doing rituals to protect the trees in public, have the media out, make sure everybody, direct action stuff.
Yeah.
And so the upshot, though, was that our courage and our unexpected win, nobody thought we would. They thought it was a fait accompli. And they, you know, the county commissioner said their hands were tied. City council said their hands were tied. Everybody was pointing at each other. But it gave other people in other neighborhoods that were also under assault courage to defy new developments. And then suddenly everybody started realizing, wait a minute, two trees here, one tree there, 10 here. There's a canopy. It's a holistic overarching the entire city problem.
Mm-hmm.
How bad is it? We can sense it. We can see it. They're there. They're not there 1 minute. And so they have now, so many good people are using all of their talents, and they have a million of them, to do their part to try and enable us to save and preserve our tree canopy so that we can preserve tourism, but also for our quality of life. And so that's what we've been involved in behind the scenes and in meetings and in, you know, doing these this publicity stuff as well, you know.
Queen Lady Passion and Steve Rasmussen here on the Mothership Slight Return, Tree Advocates of Asheville. So, yeah, it's great to have you all here and to hear about how you got into this mode of defending Asheville's trees. It sounds like it's turned into a much larger project in scope than one cluster of trees now.
Well, yeah, and here's what changed. For years, we were told that we could not have stronger tree protections in Asheville because we'd have to get the state legislature to pass a local law enabling it, and they hate Asheville right now, as anyone who's followed state politics knows.
Yes.
Well, then in last April, the state legislature, under pressure from development lobbyists, tried to pass a law that would have gutted tree protections in every city and county in North Carolina. And at the end of that bill, they gave all the local laws authorizing all of the cities and counties' tree ordinances. Well, come to find out, we had a local law that was passed in 1985 that nobody knew about.
Either
it was covered it up or forgotten about.
They buried it.
And so, you know, we and the people in the city government realized, wait a minute, we've got a lot more authority and power to do something about this than we thought. And so that, together with this canopy study, and on top of all that, the city's comprehensive plan. You know, the city makes a comprehensive plan every so often that just looks at the overall problems and solutions that need to be done in this city. And one of its chief priorities is climate resilience, preparing for climate change. And in line with that, that's part of why the tree canopy study was commissioned. And what that study found was that 891 acres of tree loss at 6.4% over the last 10 years, that's the equivalent of, well, trees absorb carbon. You know, they're one of the best carbon sinks that you can have. That's the equivalent of 2 million gallons of gasoline, according to the tree canopy study. That's how much carbon is, was kept, actually, in the atmosphere because of this destruction of trees. They also are...
That those trees would have absorbed, if they were living, if they had not been cut down and killed.
They would have absorbed the equivalent of 2 million gallons of gasoline and carbon.
And wow. Asheville has seen a lot of recent, almost unprecedented flooding on a regular basis.
Yep.
And that is due to impermeable parking lots. It's due to when developers do plant a tree or two on their... You know, mostly concrete
parking lot.
Yeah,
parking lots. They're spindly. They're not native. They don't last. They're not. They don't put them in real soil. So
parking lot.
Exactly, and trees are also stormwater sponges. You know, they prevent that kind of flooding, and according to the canopy study, that amount of trees lost over the last 10 years. Is equivalent to 18 million gallons of stormwater that would have been captured by those trees and kept from flooding our streets. And
wow.
27 Olympic swimming pools worth, they said. And there's an economic figure that's attached to that, too. There are calculations of how much, that represents in lost money, and that's $1.6 million worth just in the stormwater stormwater amount alone, you know, all the money that had to be spent fixing that stuff.
A 6% trend in 10 years may seem on the surface rather insignificant, but these trends tend to increase, they tend to continue, and unabated, if we don't even capture back what we've already lost, this will no longer be a Tree City USA. This will no longer be a tourist attraction well known for its beauty, that has several different seasons, and that attracts the kind of people that our city depends upon. It's got real economic impact. We encourage people, one thing they can do is stop mowing. Start letting volunteer seeds come in, and what grows, grows.
Natives.
Native stuff.
We've got a big problem with invasive species, too.
Yeah.
Pluck that. Right. You don't have to pesticide it, just pluck it.
Yeah.
Trim. But they can also quickly, easily, and almost freely declare their backyards a natural wildlife habitat. We've done that for many years. And you'd be amazed how many species grow on a teeny weeny plot of land if they're given it little space.
Including trees. Native trees, exactly.
Well, that gives them nesting places and cover places from predators and just lots of options, things to eat.
Exactly.
And so a lot of people are doing that to make these sort of spot migratory path stopping places where they have something to eat or a place to rest.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, they can do that through the Backyard National Wildlife Federation.
Yeah, that's right. Backyard habitat, front yard habitat. Exactly.
And so those are, so you don't have to put up a bird bath, you don't have to feed them, you don't have to do anything.
Right.
You can just leave them alone and kind of sort of coexist and stop seeing your backyard as just flat grass that's not very well nourished and not resilient, not diverse, and not a lot of shelter.
Yeah, or food.
Or for food or anything. So that's just a simple, simple thing that people can do. They can
and stop mowing.
Yeah,
like you don't,
stop
it's,
mowing.
It's things you don't have to do anymore.
Things you don't have to do. Things
well,
that actually
gas you don't
harm.
Have to burn anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of pollution. And actually, lawns create a lot of stormwater runoff, too, believe
mm-hmm.
it or not.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's not deep roots there.
Right.
And actually, they cause a lot of trees. You know, people worry about trees falling over in the storms. Well, most of the time, that's due to trees that are... They've got lawn running right up to their trunk, practically. Mm. So they, mm-hmm. because of the shallow, you know, the water doesn't get very far down that lawn. Mm. So the tree's roots grow shallow to pick it up. Mm. And it's
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, sort of like that. But, but, you know, the main problem here is, well, the main problem really is overdevelopment and really
right.
stupid development. I mean, sure, it's going to get denser as more people come here and as more people flee, you know, Florida sinking underwater
right.
and
right.
that sort of thing with climate
right.
change. But we can do it a lot more intelligently. And then,
right, you have to plan.
Yeah.
And the South, you know, Asheville is still a southern city in that respect. Like, Asheville never got religion on planning.
Not until very late, yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, now they're talking about it, but we're not seeing planning in action at this point.
Well,
you
then
know?
They approve things in the downtown master plan and other plans,
right.
grand plans, mm-hmm. 25-year plans.
Right, right.
But then when you're looking for funding to actually implement it, gee, it's just not happening.
Right.
Well,
and,
so.
A good example of that is one thing we're working with some folks right now, and you've probably seen this on the TV news, the Collier Woods over by Ravenscroft in the South Slope area, over by Cox Avenue. There's a stand of 100-year-old oaks, about 24 or so of them, that have been there since the time of the Ravenscroft School at the turn of the last century. And so a developer naturally wants to knock them down and put in apartment building, but they're the last stand of mature trees in the South Slope. And
who are these people?
Well, we've actually been working with them, and they have agreed to sell the property to a nonprofit for about $500,000. It's touch and go as to whether that group can raise that money.
Wow.
If people are interested in donating,
yeah.
That would be great.
They can go to mountaintrue.org.
Perfect, yeah.
And specify that it's for the Ravenscroft Reserve Initiative.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But also, just keep an eye on the news, because it keeps coming up as we have to go through these rounds of hearings, because, you see, the downtown master plan doesn't make any provision for trees or open space. In other words, our regulations in the city are really primitive when it comes to preserving the environment. They're very, very advanced when it comes to giving developers lots of loopholes to
build.
We've
been encouraging the city to hire an urban forester.
Right,
forestry,
yeah.
You know, somebody that's skilled and being able to assess and to maybe even work on... ensuring that certain incentives we might be able to get the city to approve
mm-hmm.
for people not to cut down trees. That means developers, even individual homeowners. Mm-hmm. There are many incentives that they could provide
mm-hmm.
To make it more worth their while to keep the wildlife and continue to keep Asheville green and cool. And so trying to get the budget money for that approved, trying to, remind them and sort of exert a little public pressure is really key to that.
Yeah.
Trying to say, well, there must be something can be done. We must be able to
yeah.
find money somewhere.
Yeah.
What can we do? Help us out.
Right.
And so there are just a ton of different aspects and possibilities and different angles that this can be approached.
Oh, yeah, and so many benefits. I mean, you talked about flood suppression.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, trees also serve as drought suppression system where they keep the water flowing in the streams throughout the season for all the wildlife that relies on that. They also have air cleaning benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They purify the air
and oxygenate
and provide, yeah, fresh air, exactly. And yeah, but I've always loved that about trees, flood suppression and drought suppression at the same time.
Yeah. Stabilize. They stabilize the local climate in a lot of ways.
They do, and they're environmental barometers. And when you start seeing their absence, you start seeing immediate effects that are scientifically provable data. Mm-hmm. And so now that that data has been presented in this recent symposium by NASA and the other groups.
Right. So there was, let's talk about that
there.
A little bit.
There were
400 people?
Yes.
It was crammed.
It was standing room only.
We had to, originally we were going to do it at the Collider downtown, which fits 200 people. We had to move the venue because so many people wanted to come.
And all but two council folk attended.
That's right.
And then there was an after party with a bit of discussion at the Funkatorium.
And I heard Keith Young suggested an Asheville Green New Deal.
Yes,
and I'm looking forward to finding out more about that tomorrow at a meeting that we're having to hear about.
He mentioned that he wanted to include money to pay an urban forester for Asheville
and
his Asheville Green New Deal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Because there other cities have done this. In fact, we're behind. For such a cool, hip, sort of intelligent city, which we are, we're full of folks like that. Indeed, we are behind on preserving our environment during a time of real crisis.
And planning. Like you were saying, Asheville has begun to plan, but we're not living in a planned environment here in Asheville. We're not seeing the results of planning in Asheville. You know what I mean?
The results of laissez-faire development.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just let them run amok.
Yeah.
Let the bandits play,
I bought that property. I've got property rights. I'm the king of the world now, and I can do what I want.
Charlotte catalyst capitalists do their thing.
It's a really old thought form that's past. It's way past,
it's very selfish.
Yeah.
And the truth is that the vast majority of these developments, these infill developments, are absolutely outside the range of regular Asheville citizens to afford them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they really only serve newcomers, new retirees, people passing through with just a bit, trustafarians.
And whoever profits from gentrification. That's the other people who benefit.
A lot of them are
short-term
rentals,
while they talk a good game about reserving some for affordability and all that, we don't see that. It doesn't manifest.
But I understand that there's new regulations coming before Asheville's city council in February for a vote. What's that all about?
Maybe in February. I hadn't heard the date yet, but...
that's according to Joel Burgess of the Asheville Citizen Times, December 1st.
Oh, okay.
He did mention that in the article.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad.
We're trying to pull all the stuff we've learned, all our areas of expertise into a cohesive pitch.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But let's hear about
these
regs. This
would be a tree protection amendment, I believe it's called, to the development ordinance, to the Unified
UDO.
Development Ordinance, the UDO.
Yeah, right.
And it's only the beginning because it's just trying to stop a little of the bleeding, as one of the lawyers put, one of the staffers put it.
Yeah.
But it would probably increase the amount. Well, establish an amount of trees and and tree cover that developers have to preserve on a lot. It would probably prevent the kind of thing that realtors and developers do now, which is as soon as they buy a forested property, they clear cut it even before they've sold it to anyone. So it just sits there. Empty open space
eroding.
And if it doesn't sell, it just wastes away.
There's one of those right across the street here.
It's very unattractive.
Definitely.
And
there, I understand there are a couple of cities that have done this in North Carolina already.
Quite a few, in
Greensboro and Raleigh.
Well, the funny thing is that local law that I was mentioning that got passed in 1985.
Raleigh has the identical one.
Yeah, they'd also applied to Raleigh. So Raleigh's went ahead and actually acted on all of this, and they're light years ahead of us. They, you know, they have all kinds of rules protecting mature trees, incentivizing the keeping of mature trees, and planting new trees when, you know, those are cut.
Wow, that's really saying something if Asheville is behind Raleigh's level of urban planning for tree protection.
And yet we've got the very same, you know, authorizing law. Yes. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
So, but, of course, everybody would say plant a tree today, and that's true. And schools are doing it. West Asheville, Vance Elementary School, we live right across the street from.
Yeah.
They have their study focus is ecology and the environment, and they do a great job of planting a lot of shrubbery and vegetables and fruit and trees.
And replacing lawn turf with vegetation,
with
herbs and flowers, food for pollinators and
it's
wildlife.
Simple things sometimes you don't even necessarily think about. Like instead of fencing with metal or wood that will collapse one day, it's inevitable. No fence like that stays perfectly erect forever. Doing a tree line instead. And, you know, the National Arbor Federation offers native trees per growing zone like ours for pennies.
Right. So plant a tree where you are.
Yeah.
And the Greenworks, Asheville Greenworks, which is also deeply involved in this. I'm a member of the Tree Protection Task Force, which is I'll get to in a minute, that people can also, you know, join or attend our meetings.
Yeah.
And it's a branch of both Greenworks and the Urban Forest Commission. But they're working on a goal of increasing our urban tree cover to 50% by 2040, if not sooner.
All right. Yeah. Sooner sounds great.
Sooner,
yeah,
better.
That's what we all agree.
I also would encourage people that are listening to recognize that the people that we elect as our representatives, whether they be county or whether they be city, are human beings. And they're not lofty. They are available. You can contact them, and you can give them your opinion, give them to share your concerns. You can show up any Tuesday to a city council meeting and, you know, speak your piece and get involved in any number of these different angle areas and groups that are working in tandem towards the same goal, just from different angles.
Yeah, I mean, what was it, Ethiopia that broke the world record and planted 300 million...
Right.
250 million trees in a day in 10 hours.
Yeah.
I think Asheville could plant a quarter million trees next year.
We could.
If Asheville, the city of Asheville, got everybody coordinated, and the nonprofits could all coordinate, and everybody's like bringing in their churches are bringing in their volunteers, everybody's bringing in the volunteers, get the teen center to turn their people out.
Yeah,
get the six-year-olds out there. Everybody's planting trees.
Well, that's part of where the need for that urban forest master plan comes in.
Right.
So, now if people want to get involved, they can. There's a very active Facebook group called Asheville Buncombe County Trees.
Okay.
Asheville / Buncombe County Trees.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, that's probably the best place to find out about meeting times for things like the Tree Preservation Task Force, which is open to the public.
Okay.
But if you don't have time for endless meetings, certainly you might could make some time when key votes come up before city council about this or involving...
Well, here's one such opportunity.
Trees and city plans.
Exactly. There's going to be public comment on the budget. You know, they call it pre-budget public comment. They want to find out about people's priorities in January, and that'll be in the paper or on the news. And one of the things people can do is go to that and insist, we've got to fund the urban forester and the urban forest master plan.
What's the date again?
Well, I'm not sure of the date yet. I don't even know if it's been set, but I just we're told that it's in January.
Okay.
And council meetings, is that the council meeting?
Well, it will be a council meeting.
They're usually on Tuesday nights around 5 plus.
You have raised a great point that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and that is that Asheville's sort of reached its critical mass level of savvy folks who want to see progressive a progressive community implemented in Asheville and not just a progressive reputation.
Right.
And but not everybody's figured out yet that the Asheville city government and county government doesn't have it covered for us completely.
Right.
And that there's a need for this groundswell of progressive folks to go ahead and get involved, get their hands dirty, meet some of these people, press the flesh, get to know your neighbors, and start organizing. Queen Lady Passion and Steve Rasmussen, such a pleasure to have you on the Mothership Slight Return. Tree advocates, tree warriors of Asheville, unite. It is so great to have you here. I hope we can have you back many times to talk about your victories and the things that people should be paying attention to when it comes to the trees. Here in Asheville, it is what makes us what we are. Thank you for joining us here on the Mothership Slight Return tonight for this illuminating discussion of the urban canopy of our fair city. We've been hearing the sounds of the Indian snake charmer with Titunath, Kalanath, Sukhanath, and Ram Chandra Nath from Kathmandu, Nepal. Recorded in an alley by Aaron Dillaway in March 2005 and released on Hanson Records in the same year. Sounds of the Indian Snake Charmer.